This is WTF, What's Threatening Farmers? The podcast where we take on the policies, the pretenders, the activists, the do-gooders, the uninformed, the misinformed, and the just plain ignoramuses, the wingnuts and the nut jobs and the nitwits, all of whom are attacking agriculture and putting at risk our farms, agribusinesses, and rural way of life. I'm Gary Truitt, your host for WTF, What's Threatening Farmers? What's Threatening Farmers? Exaggeration. Yes, the price of eggs is a hot topic everywhere you go. It's in the grocery store. It's on social media. It's in mainstream media. It's, of course, talked about in Washington. It is a hot topic right now. Shortages of eggs, prices of eggs, and there's lots of misinformation out there. And the situation is being used by activists and consumer groups to foster their own agendas. And then there's the conspiracy theory people. Oh, they're having a field day about this, to say nothing of the late night comedians. So let's try and bring a little common sense to this discussion of egg prices and its related HPAI infestation. Before we do, however, let me give you a bit of a spoiler alert. We have a special new award that we will be presenting at the end of the podcast, so stick around for that. Now, first of all, the egg is just an egg, although it has become much more than that. There was a time when we were more concerned about what was inside the egg rather than outside the egg. But today, the lonely, incredible, edible egg is an inflation indicator. Prices of eggs go up, and oh my gosh, the economy is going to hell. It has become a political football. In this last presidential campaign, the price of eggs was a political kicking point for both sides. And of course, this is all related to the spread of HPAI, better known in the media as bird flu. But not so fast. That's not the only factor here. That's not the only part of this story. Consumer demand, consumer transformation of demand, and the changes that have been forced upon the egg industry by government and by consumer and activist groups are having a big impact on the egg prices and egg shortages. To give us a little perspective on this, I've invited Brian Ernest. He is the lead economist for animal protein at CoBank's Knowledge Exchange Research Division. That's a part of the Farm Credit System. He provides market and industry research for the poultry, pork, and beef sectors. Mr. Ernest has been 10 years consulting the industry on a variety of issues, and he put together a very fascinating report that really breaks down and takes all the exaggeration and hysteria out of this situation and gives us a picture of what consumers can expect and the impact all of this is having on the egg industry today and the impact it will have on the egg industry in the future. Let's start with, you produced a report and released in early February that went through and talked about the history and of these egg prices, because this has exploded in the media as a result of sharply higher increases in egg prices due primarily, or at least partially, to the spread of the bird flu, the highly pathogenic HPAI infestation. It's devastating Indiana, as many other states. It is really a big issue for the poultry and the egg industry in particular, and it has now become a major consumer issue as well. But it is not new. This is an issue that's been going on for a long time, and as you indicated in your report, it's not just a bird flu issue. There are more things at work here. So let's dive into that. Tell us a little bit about some of the conclusions that you came to in studying the long-term trend in egg consumption and egg prices in the United States.
Yeah, Gary, this is 2015, 2016 was kind of the first major outbreak of highly pathogenic avian influenza in the United States. Back then, we lost, I think, something like 40 million table egg layers, in that 7 or 8 month time span that it impacted egg supplies then. This time around, it's been something much bigger. Since 2022, I think we're hovering around 150 million table egg layers that have been, affected by bird flu. And, not a lot of people realize just how robust our supply of eggs is in the United States, but, that's That's a chunk of the roughly 300 million table egg layers that we have in commercial flocks. And it's been spread over a 3-year time frame, but there's been a major upswing in detections over the last 5 months. You look back to the beginning of October, and I think we're hovering somewhere around 50 million. As we kind of dig into it, the big it's been a big shock to the system to lose all of these egg-laying hens. One of the big shocks has been to individual states. California was hit severely in December. I looked at the inventory report that USDA puts out on, how many laying hens they have in the commercial flocks in each individual state. And they showed about 8.5 million to 10 million egg-laying hens on a regular basis. And if I look at what was affected or depopulated in California, it showed roughly 9 million table egg-laying hens just in December alone. So effectively, that wipes out all of the egg layers that they had on hand in December. So California, if you think about it, they've got a population of roughly 39 million residents. And what I kind of equate is a one-to-one ratio. If you have one human resident in the United States, you need roughly one table egg layer for each person. So, that equates out to a shortage of roughly 40 million table egg laying hens short in California to supply just the residents within the state. So you're right. I think when we look at Midwest, there's a big swath of production of agriculture in the Midwest, and certainly animal agriculture. We've got a lot of table egg laying hens in those core states, Ohio, Iowa, Indiana, in that area.
Now, one of the things that you talked about in your report was the shift in consumption. First of all, we have seen, according to your research, a significant increase over the past 5, 10, maybe 15 years in egg consumption. All of a sudden, Americans are eating a lot more eggs than they ever did before. I don't know if we're suddenly eating a lot more quiche or making deviled eggs or exactly what it is, but there has been a big shift and big increase in egg consumption by U.S. consumers, and that is exacerbating this shortage situation.
Yeah, I kind of remember back 2013, 2014, around that time frame. I think it was McDonald's came out with like all-day breakfast, and all of a sudden breakfast options became very popular. The negative connotations around cholesterol with egg yolks went away, and all of a sudden eggs became very healthy, and you saw it in a lot of new items. I mentioned McDonald's with all-day breakfast, but also like Taco Bell. I think they came out with a breakfast item that had, an egg actually used for the taco shell. It was a time where eggs were all of a sudden booming. Breakfast items were very, very much booming. We had a lot of restaurant-centric focus where these restaurants were egg concepts, and that was kind of that time frame. And, I did the math to equate out, per capita consumption on a monthly basis. And it went from somewhere around, this is just kind of watching it throughout the year, annualized, U.S. citizens were eating about 250 eggs per capita in that time frame before that 2014. And then as this boom in interest and demand came into play through 2019, it worked its way up to 300 eggs on an annualized basis per capita. So we added another 50 eggs or so, 45 on an annual basis to the plate in that short time span. So very, very interesting to see how these unique offerings, including eggs, and a really strong interest from the consumer on protein and trying to get more animal protein into your diet really has played into more consumption.
And not only eating more eggs, but there's been a revolution that's taking place in the egg case, because all of a sudden you just didn't want eggs. You wanted cage-free eggs, and then you wanted happy chicken eggs, and you wanted, in some cases, eggs that didn't come from chickens at all. And all of a sudden, you have all these different options out there, all these kind of different segments of the consumer population that's wanting differences in which eggs are produced or the what's inside the egg. Companies were starting to do special feeding programs and claiming their eggs were more nutritious than their competition. So all of a sudden, you've got all this competition and this change in consumer demand, and the industry is having to respond to that, to say nothing of legal and laws that are taking place, again, particularly in California, due to ballot issues that are requiring changes in the egg-laying industry. The industry is in the midst of trying to adapt to that change. At the same time, we're seeing this increase in demand. That has really set us up to not be in a good position to handle this sudden shortage that we have because of the avian flu.
Yeah, the specialty egg segment is one that, I find fascinating. You think back 20 years ago, and we could call it a commodity, right? They were really just kind of your commodity eggs. And retailers use that particular item as a loss leader to bring folks into the store, and they put it on feature. And when I say a loss leader, a lot of times they may be taking a loss on that item, anticipating that the shopper was going to fill their basket with all the other items. So eggs are a staple item that you're typically seeking out, when you go to the grocery store. And they're usually part of the cart of options that the consumer is looking for. And then if we fast forward to where we're at now, you look at the egg case, and it looks very much different than it did 20 years ago. You're right. There's all these different varieties. The specialty egg segment has grown massively, and cage-free is a part of that. I think the cage-free egg movement kind of occurred about a decade ago, 2015, 2016, and we had a lot of corporate commitments around cage-free production, where, some of the larger retailers, food service entities, even hotel chains, they said, we're only going to source cage-free, eggs by 2025 or 2026 was the target that a lot of them chose to kind of focus in for, converting their sourcing needs from this conventional type egg to a specialty egg that was cage free. And so lo and behold, we're right in that time frame. We're 2025, where a lot of these commitments were becoming due from the corporations. I think there is a list of maybe 130 different companies that made their commitments around cage free. And so the egg industry, at that time, they said, well, this is a massive changeover in capital and capital infusion that we'll need to fulfill all these commitments. The United Egg Producers went out and said, how many conversions are we going to have to do of cage-free production, and how much new capital are we going to have to put in? And they suggested we need around 220 million cage-free egg layers by the time we got to 2025. USDA current estimates are around 120 million. So we're 100 million short of what all those commitments were just from the corporations, not necessarily including the state legislature from, I think there's 9 states that will only allow cage-free eggs to be sold in their state. But all that, the investment that United Egg Producers had for an estimate at that time, and these were just, kind of putting rough math together, they said they thought it would be about $10 billion worth of investment in cage-free production by the time we get to today. So well behind those targets, and that overall has been a big mix in kind of changing what supply is available for consumers.
And what's interesting, as we look at the current influenza situation hitting the egg industry, and you touched on this in your report, and I have been to cage operations and cage-free operations, but there is the potential for more exposure or more risk for disease in cage-free operations. You don't have the biosecurity and the air quality controls that you have in a cage situation. So again, we're moving into a type of production in the egg industry demanded by consumers and by lawmakers that puts more egg layers at risk for avian influenza simply because of the way we're flowing. So we've got a number of factors coming together here, and it's not painting a pretty picture for the egg industry.
Yeah, I wouldn't dismiss that. Certainly there's varying degree of thought there too, because some of the infrastructure that's in place may be aging if it's under the conventional type systems. Maybe the houses are maybe a little bit more open with cage free, and you've got more human interaction. If you've got egg catchers that need to go into the barns with cage free aviary systems, so there's a whole new mix of protocol and guidelines that these farms and operators need to go through as they're going through this conversion process. And, certainly now biosecurity has become front of mind with the producer. And that's one thing that, I know they take very, very seriously, when they're trying to ensure that consumers have access to this item that's both perishable and an everyday item for a lot of folks.
Again, you talked a little bit about how the egg used to be sort of a generic commodity. We were more worried about what was inside the egg rather than what was outside the egg. But what's interesting is the egg has now taken on a life of its own. It is now a measure of inflation. People, don't bother with the Fed's estimate on inflation. It's like, well, did the price of eggs go up? All of a sudden, that means the economy is not doing good. We saw in the last campaign, presidential campaign, that eggs became a political issue. So all of a sudden, this whole thing around eggs is really getting out of control. And again, the HPAI infestation is not helping the situation. What's the future? Where are we going to go here? Obviously, the USDA is predicting that egg prices will remain high for a certain period of time, probably the rest of this year. We're hoping to begin to get some handles on the disease outbreak and begin to find ways to control either through depopulation or through vaccines or some other protocol, get a handle on the HPAI infestation. But what do you see as the future going forward here for the egg industry as well as for consumers?
Well, a lot of the times, when as an economist, we're looking at, how does the market take care of deficiencies? And certainly there's a supply deficiency. So you would expect that over time that will be focused on, and that we'll see entrant from other companies that are looking at growing production to combat some of these deficiencies related to bird flu. I don't think we're out of the woods yet in terms of mitigation risk from bird flu. We see the industry has been dealing with it for 3 years now, and while I think there's been 3 weeks since we've had an outbreak or depopulations in the commercial flock, we're still in a time frame where migratory wildfowl movement there can have impact on bird flu in the commercial setting. So overall, I would say the risk remains high for still these elevated egg prices. It's going to take a while for repopulating these barns to have productive new layers in the facilities. And, that's one thing that I think will continue to play out through this year. I was at the USDA Ag Outlook Forum last week and kind of listening to, some of the thoughts there with the veterinarians and also the market prognosticators. And, they expect that, I think USDA's outlook for egg prices is that even if we anticipate that we'll have no more impact from bird flu, that, we'll still have higher prices this year just as a result of where the market is at right now. And that should be noted that, the expectation is that we're probably not done with bird flu yet this year, just because they've had an ongoing impact for the last 3 years. And it seems very prevalent in both wildfowl and now in dairy herds and other animals as well. So certainly the risk is still there for the consumer, at least, to be dealing with high prices near term and kind of throughout the remainder of 2025.
And again, consumers, when it comes to prices, tend to have pretty long memories. And as you indicated, eggs used to be a loss leader. So again, these prices seem astronomical when consumers have this vision of $1 a dozen eggs. And now we're talking $6, $7, $8, $9, $10 eggs, depending on what you're buying and the region of the country you're at. As you know, when prices go up, demand tends to back off. Will this lead to a downturn in consumer demand for eggs? And will that last long? Or when prices be, because, you know, are prices ever going to come back down to where they were, say, 10, 15 years ago? Are we moving the egg industry into a whole new realm of where we're going to see, $4 and $5 eggs pretty common for the foreseeable future? And how is that going to impact demand?
Yeah, demand for eggs is fairly inelastic, right? It's one of those items that even with a fairly big swing in price, folks still buying them and utilizing them at kind of a similar rate as to what they were before. If they don't have them on the shelf, though, it's difficult to consume. And all to say that, in the near term, if I'm a consumer and I go to the grocery store and, there's a sign on the refrigerator section that says, you can only take two dozen eggs. Well, if I was only going in there for one dozen, I took two anyways, because I have a vision in my head that may not be a dozen in there next week when I come in, right? So, we see, I think, kind of increased consumption in the short term just because of the scarcity of mindset. But then on the flip side of that, food service is roughly, I think, about a third of overall egg disappearance in the United States, of food service, HRI, or hotel, restaurant industry. That section, we're already seeing some premium put on eggs as a result of the scarcity. I think Waffle House is one that said, we're going to put a 50 cent per egg premium on dishes that have eggs. If I'm a consumer that's going in and buying, my breakfast at Waffle House, I may think about buying something else, for my breakfast that morning and not having the three egg omelet, So in that way, I think the higher price or a premium may ration some of this demand back near term. But that also in the back of my mind is, well, we've got the Easter holiday right around the corner too. We're about a month out from Easter. Typically we see elevated demand at retail, for the Easter time frame. And then after that, it kind of cools off. So, that overall, I think it's this tug of war that we'll see with, available supply and the consumer interest in eggs remains elevated, so where we could see some backing away, but it may not always be at that focus of the retail shelf. It may be in other areas as well.
What about the impact it's going to have on the industry in other industries, pork, beef, dairy, when we have these kinds of massive market disruptions? The bigger the operation, the better they are to handle it. The medium and the small guys are really tough to survive in these kinds of situations. Is that the case in the egg industry as well? And are we going to see some of your smaller and medium-sized operators perhaps get out of the business, or at least not be able to continue in the business, and that will just simply lead to more concentration in the egg industry as a result of this?
Well, as it stands today, I think the egg industry as a whole is fairly diverse. I was looking at some data earlier today, trying to think about market concentration, and there's 25 companies in the United States that are listed, and these are WAP publishing numbers, that have more than 4 million egg layers, under their umbrella for production. I do think as we move forward, certainly more focus on mitigating the biosecurity risk for bird flu will play into, I think, both long-term planning for production, and some of these companies as they're trying to figure out, do I stay in business or not? I think that probably will be a bigger part of the conversation moving forward than it ever hasn't been in the past. And You certainly think about the overall animal protein industry as a whole. This is something that I think they should be focusing on when they're thinking about production measures and that sort of thing. So, overall, I'm optimistic that they find a pathway forward that continues to be competitive and that provides the consumer with a robust egg supply as they've enjoyed, in the past.
Thank you, Brian Ernest from CoBank, for being on our podcast today and giving us some good insights and information. All right, let's sum things up. The HPAI is real. It is widespread. It is reducing the number of eggs being produced. It is hurting egg farmers financially and otherwise. It is not the only cause for high prices of eggs. Consumer demand is up. Demand by animal activists and consumer groups for more cage-free eggs is continuing, and that is dangerous and is likely to expand or at least continue the spread of HPAI infections. Consumers' expectations on egg prices are unrealistic. In the past, retailers lost leader egg prices. Those days are gone, and egg prices, while they may moderate in the future, are still going to be higher than they used to be. Meanwhile, we're getting some unclear directions as to the future of the egg industry. The new administration from Washington has rolled out a 5-pronged plan to deal with HPAI and the egg shortage situation, but it's a bit fuzzy and a bit confused. We may get more clarification as we go forward. So keep all that in mind as you hear and continue to hear all the stories and hysteria about egg prices, HPAI, and the exaggeration around the egg industry. As we wrap up our podcast today, a special award needs to be presented. It's something new, and we may be doing this from time to time. I'm calling it the Dumb Cluck Award, and it will be given to someone who makes one of the more ridiculous, if not downright stupid, statements about agriculture. Our first award goes to our new Secretary of Agriculture, Rollins, who told Fox News and the American public that the way to deal with high egg prices... let's go put some chickens in your backyard.
We want people to become backyard farmers, right? We want moms and dads and kids. We've had backyard chickens for my four teenagers since they were little kids. So it is a wonderful potential opportunity. We feel really good about the plan and lifting those regulations off to allow the households to do it themselves. I think could be a really neat silver lining in this whole episode.
Really? Do you think the American public is ready to raise chickens in their backyard? In their suburban homes, in their urban condos and apartments. I can just see all the chickens roosting in the balconies of those tenements in New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles. Congratulations, Ms. Rollins, for getting our first Dumb Cluck Award here at WTF. That wraps up our podcast today. You can get a link to the CoBank report on the egg industry at our website, whosyourrighttoday.com. And be sure to check us out on social media at the WTF Podcast on Facebook. Don't miss another edition of WTF. Subscribe to this podcast on the Hoosier Ag Today or Michigan Ag Today Podcast Network or wherever you download podcasts. Meanwhile, stay on top of the latest threats to agriculture on the WTF Podcast page on Facebook. Join me next time for another edition of WTF, What's Threatening Farmers? I'm Gary Truitt.